Members coming to order, Rosa, will you please call the roll?
Chair Payne.
Here.
Vice Chair Zika. Ranking Member Eskamani.
Here.
Representatives Altman.
Here.
Caruso.
Good morning.
Casello.
Here.
DeSigley.
Here.
Grieco.
Here.
Hart. Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Maggart.
Here.
McLean. Sabatini.
Here.
Schoaf.
Here.
Silvers. Saroy. Schlossberg.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rosa. Members, it's good to be back. Hope everyone had an enjoyable Thanksgiving. Yes, sir, Representative Clemmons.
You didn't call my name.
Didn't call your name?
Representative Clemmons.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you for noticing that. Sorry we missed you. Welcome back from the Thanksgiving holidays. And so let's get back to work and get started. For today's agenda, we have two things to consider, HB 137 by Representative Roth and a staff presentation on estimating conferences. So the first bill up is HB 137 by Representative Roth, Florida Housing Finance Corporation Revenue Bonds. And Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair. I really appreciate this opportunity. Ranking Member Eskamani, Vice Chair Zika. My bill, HB 137, Florida Housing Finance Corporation Revenue Bonds. This is a glitch bill, in my opinion. The bill proposes to streamline the bond approval process that are used by other agencies that have this process has become more troublesome in 2020 with COVID-19 and scheduling of Cabot hearing meetings. So currently, revenue bonds are secured solely by the revenues, assets, and guarantees associated with each bond. Florida Housing Finance Corporation bonds are not an obligation of the state and do not impact the state's credit rating. So what my bill does, very simply, this designates that the Florida Housing Finance Corporation will be the state fiscal agency to make the determination in connection with the issuance of these Florida housing bonds, which is very similar to other type transactions. And that's, Chairman, is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Roth. Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, any amendments? No amendments. Public testimony on the bill? No testimony. Debate on the bill, members, debate on the bill. Seeing no debate, Representative Roth, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Wave close.
We're having wave close. Rosa, will you please call the roll on the bill?
Chair Payne.
Yes.
Vice Chair Zika.
Yes.
Ranking Member Eskamani.
Yes.
Representatives Altman.
Yes.
Caruso.
Yes.
Casello.
Yes.
Clemmons.
Yes.
DeSigley.
Yes.
Grieco.
Yes.
Hart.
Yes.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Maggart.
Yes.
McLean.
Yes.
Sabatini.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Silvers.
Yes.
Saroy. Schlossberg.
Yes.
17-0.
Members, by your vote, please show that bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Roth. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Members, next we have a presentation on estimating conferences by our on-staff presenter, which is Kimberly Berg, our attorney, who's very capable of presenting this information to us today. So remember, it's information, and we'll encourage questions afterwards. Kimberly, you're recognized. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, members. So the last time we met, Vince, our staff director, did a great job walking you through our current budget situation here in Florida. Part of that touched on the estimating conference process, and Chair Payne thought it might be helpful to go into a little more detail on that and help give you some more background on how those numbers are adopted, how things get looked at. And so today, we're going to look at the estimating conference process in a little more detail. So Florida's consensus estimating conferences are a formalized, professional, non-political process to determine available revenues and major cost drivers for the annual budget. That is the estimating conference process in a nutshell. What we're going to cover today goes a little more into detail, how these conferences are structured, what types of conferences there are, what kind of information they produce, and again, why it's important for you. So as you all know, the estimating conference process is part of the broader constitutional context of the state budget. The Florida Constitution requires that there must be an annual budget that sets forth appropriations. That budget must be balanced, and the spending of funds must be pursuant to appropriations made by law. Looking at the constitutional requirement for a balanced budget, unless you've heard this presentation before, you might wonder where the numbers come from that we're trying to balance. The anticipated income and expenditures for existing law and for proposed legislation are adopted through the consensus estimating conference process and are then used by leadership to determine what changes should be made to Florida law that year and what appropriations should be made in that year's budget. In essence, the annual budgeting process requires answers to a couple of broad questions. First, how much revenue will the state have? And second, what will the demand be for major service categories? The estimating conferences help to answer those questions through a formal process for adopting official information. That information is used by the governor's office and by the legislature, but also must be used by every state agency and by the judicial branch in carrying out their duties under the state planning and budgeting process. The use of this process of consensus estimating conferences began in the 1970s and was formalized in statute in 1985. The benefit of this process is to help answer these questions about revenue and expenditures in a way that is as non-political and objective as possible. In effect, that frees all of you as policymakers to consider policy options instead of fiscal projections. So I'm going to go over some basics of how these conferences are structured and work. First, the professional staff are the principals that make the decisions. So the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the President of the Senate, and the Governor's Office each designate a principal for each conference. For the revenue conferences, that's frequently the staff director of the Ways and Means Committee. And then the coordinator of the Office of Economic and Demographic Research also sits as a principal on all of the committees by statute. All of the meetings are noticed and open to the public. You are welcome to come join us. Some of them are truly riveting. Most of them are not. The conference decisions and the official information they produce, they do require unanimous agreement among all four of those principals. So I've mentioned this official information a couple of times. That is the information that is used for planning and budgeting purposes by state law. And that term is defined by statute, and it means the data, forecasts, estimates, analyses, studies, and other information which the principals of the consensus estimating conference unanimously adopt for purposes of budgeting. Breaking that definition out a little bit, again, adoption requires unanimous agreement among all four of the principals. Assumption of current law and current administration, meaning when they're trying to figure out what the impact of something might be, they assume as a baseline that the current law that is in effect and the way that agencies or law enforcement are currently applying that law would continue, and then compare that to how it would work under the proposed legislation. In general, they look only at direct effects. Occasionally, if there's an indirect effect that in their judgment is pretty clearly able to be calculated, they'll consider that. They do not consider induced effects at all. And any official information that is adopted will stay in effect until the next estimating conference. So estimating conference activity is extensive. This is a big part of what we do. There are 10 distinct standing conferences set forth in statute. In addition, any of those 10 formal standing conferences can also conduct impact conferences to evaluate the impact of proposed legislation. By far, the most common of these is a revenue estimating conference, impact conference. Those are conferences that meet typically every Friday at this point during interim committee weeks and then during session, and they're considering what the fiscal impact to the state would be of any piece of proposed legislation. There are also ad hoc conferences authorized for determining impacts of constitutional amendments by citizens' initiative. These conferences operate in a manner similar to impact conferences, but the process and the results are a little more formalized in statute. Within 75 days after receipt of a proposed revision or amendment to the state constitution by initiative petition from the Secretary of State, a financial impact estimating conference is required to complete an analysis and a financial impact statement for that proposed constitutional amendment, and that is included on the ballot. When you go to vote on those, you'll sometimes see that there's a little comment on how much it's going to cost. That's coming from one of these estimating conferences. So Each year, there are normally three rounds of these conference meetings that are geared to the major events of the annual planning and budgeting cycle. So this includes summer conferences that are used for the long-range financial outlook. There are fall conferences that are typically used by the governor in developing his or her recommended budget. And then there's another round in the spring that's used by all of you for our formalized budget. Just so you're aware, some of these conferences can meet multiple times, and so those 10 standing conferences can actually be 20 to 30 separate meetings. So when a meeting happens, or when a conference meets, what happens? So in general, estimates or forecasts are presented to the principals by participants. Participants are typically staff from the Office of the Economic and Demographic Research, staff from the governor's office, and staff from relevant agency or agencies. So the principals will take that information in, they will discuss it, they'll ask questions, they'll suggest changes, they'll make tweaks, they'll mess with the spreadsheets, and then sometimes there's input from interested parties if it's relevant to that fiscal process, and the principals will then either reach an agreement and adopt something, or they'll decide the analysts need to do some more work and they'll send stuff back to tweak. Very, very common with impact conferences in particular. So there are three main types of those standing conferences established in statute. The first are underlying conferences. These are things, the conferences that provide the data used by all the other conferences. There are revenue conferences that provide estimates of the revenue, the income to the state, and there are resource demand conferences that provide estimates of cost drivers to help with how much we're going to need to spend. The first of those, the underlying conferences, have two main categories. There are demographic estimating conferences and economic estimating conferences. So the economic has both a Florida state-specific level and a national economic conference that we do in each of those cycles. The economic estimating conference is also responsible for adopting interest rates that are used in appropriations. Again, all of the data that's adopted, or all of the official information adopted by these conferences is used by all of the other conferences pursuant to law. What kind of data? So for the demographic estimating conference, you're looking at growth in population, the number of individuals that are in the state, and you're looking at changes in households, the number of households in the state and how many people might be in any one of those households. For economic estimating conferences at the Florida level, you're looking at Florida-specific forecasts for things like personal income, employment, housing starts and construction, vehicle and home sales, and visitors. At the national level, we're looking at forecasts for gross domestic product, for employment and unemployment at a national level. At housing-related estimates like prices, construction starts, and mortgage rates, we're looking at corporate profits, consumer spending, and the consumer price index, which is frequently used as a measure for inflation. That last item is something we've been getting a lot of questions about lately, so I'd like to use a couple of minutes to also discuss inflation and how it factors into the conference process. Inflation, in its simplest terms, is just an increase in prices and a corresponding fall in the purchase value of money. The United States, as I think you all are aware, is currently experiencing a period of heightened inflation. Historically, periods of high inflation are usually related to specific economic factors. Frequently, those are related to fuel supply. The current inflation is likely based to varying degrees on a number of factors, which may include supply chain issues, fewer services available during the pandemic, which led to more purchasing of consumer goods, and an influx of direct stimulus money to governments and to individuals. One of the questions we're getting a lot is how long is this going to last? And the answer is we don't know for sure. There's a lot of variation in what national economists are saying on this. If you're interested, there will be more information at the next National Economic Estimating Conference. Just to give you a feel for how inflation has been changed by the COVID pandemic, before we got into this period, December 19 was our last estimating conference before COVID was starting to be felt, and the assumed CPI for this period hovered right around 2%. The July 2020 forecast, which was kind of the height of the pandemic, reduced those expectations, assuming the CPI was going to be 1.6 in 2020 and down to 0.8 in 2021. Our summer forecast this year revised those upwards, 2.2% for 2021 and up to 3.5% for 2022. Again, the conference will be meeting again soon, and upward revisions to the level and the duration are expected. So for a estimating conference perspective, why does that matter? So inflation can affect multiple types of conferences. Part of what the revenue estimating conference does is to forecast income revenues to the state. and CPI can be a factor in what those revenues may look like. Inflation also matters for resource demand purposes, as it can affect how much the state will need to spend on required costs, like schools and prisons. And for your individual legislation, for any particular bill, you may want to pay attention to this as well, because analysts frequently will calculate a first-year impact for a particular bill, and then will grow that over the next few years using CPI to try to estimate how much a particular bill might cost the state. Now that we've talked about some of this underlying data adopted by conferences, I want to talk you through the revenue and resource demand conferences briefly. So here's a list of most of the revenue estimating conferences. There are also a couple of trust fund conferences that I didn't include on here. I'm sure you'll recognize general revenue. We do talk about that one pretty regularly, and it is the bulk of what you're looking at for budgetary purposes. But I wanted you to be aware that the revenue estimating conference also is looking at a number of other revenue streams. Each of these conferences produces a forecast for their respective revenue source. They're also producing the long-term revenue analysis conference that's held annually and adopts the 10-year outlook for the state, including general revenue and trust fund forecasts, estimates for revenue sharing with local governments, and other financial pieces that are used for budget purposes. The conference also adopts monthly revenue estimates. We use those kind of track to see whether we're bringing in as much as we expected to in any of these different categories. And as a reminder, for your purposes, there will be a round of these conferences in January. Is about the right time for this round? On the other side, revenue demand conferences look at the cost drivers for things the state will need to allocate funds for during the budgeting process. Each of these conferences is again set forth in statute, including details on the products that they're required to adopt. There are a lot of them. Again, these are things that the Appropriations Committee and those of you who are working on budget will need to be focused on for how much money the state needs to set aside in these different categories. Just so you're aware, the House principal for most of these conferences and these products is typically a member of the appropriation staff. It's frequently the budget chief responsible for the related policy area. So if you have a really important question about kid care, I don't know how helpful Vince is going to be. I'm going to talk a little bit now about impact conferences. So impact conferences, as mentioned earlier, are not standing conferences. They're called as needed to review proposed legislation. So pretty much any principal can call an impact conference or ask that a piece of legislation get added to the conference's agenda. During interim committee weeks and during session, the REC has regular impact conferences, often weekly, almost always on Fridays, frequently early in the morning. Feel free to come join us Friday at 8 a.m. These are typically aired on the Florida Channel, and they're always noticed ahead of time on the EDR website. So these are adopting fiscal impacts for either individual sections of bills or for bills as a whole, depending on the type of proposed changes. After a consensus is reached on the potential impact, that adopted impact is frequently referred to as a score. So requesting a fiscal impact is sometimes referred to colloquially as having your bill scored. You may have heard that phrase. The most prominent and frequent impact conferences are conducted by the Revenue Estimating Conference, but just so you're aware, it is possible for any of those other standing conferences to hold an impact conference. For example, social services or criminal justice sometimes have impact conferences to determine impacts on things like Medicaid or prison populations. So why do these matter for you? So impact conferences most directly impact your bills out of all of the things we've been looking at. They're crucial to the budgeting process because any bill that affects either the revenue or expenditure side of things could alter that required balanced budget. So in order to have a bill advance, you probably are going to need to have us look at it. Fiscal committees, like Ways and Means, generally can't move legislation unless the fiscal impact has been determined and that adopted impact is within acceptable bounds. Of course, the policy also has to be important and acceptable, and it has to be important enough to win out over some other competing options. Again, this just really reflects the fact that fiscal committees, like Ways and Means, are also responsible for the balanced budget, just like everybody else. For a member trying to advance legislation, friendly reminder to think ahead as much as you can. One of the first questions Chair Payne is likely to ask if you try to have something put on our schedule is, does it have a fiscal impact? And if so, has that fiscal impact been scored? When working on the tax package, for example, the chair often has to consider a wide variety of issues with varying fiscal impacts. So it's really important for everybody to know how much a particular idea might cost, both annual recurring costs and one-time non-recurring costs. As a quick reminder, the REC looks at direct impacts of proposed legislation. So if you're creating an exemption, we're going to be looking at exactly how much of that is normally sold that normally has tax and then wouldn't have tax under the legislation, for example. After session has ended, there's going to be another round of meetings every year where we look at every single bill that passed to make sure we didn't miss any impacts during session. And then there's a final document prepared called the Measures Affecting Revenue that's part of the budgeting process as well, where we identify everything that passed that has a fiscal impact and what that fiscal impact is expected to be. You know, one final note here, not all of your bills will need to go to an impact conference, but we do try to look at every bill to figure out if it needs to go to an impact conference. So if your bill has been to an impact conference, how do you find the information? Here are some helpful links for you. The adopted impacts are all posted on the Office of Economic and Demographic Research website. That's a direct link to the revenue impact page. Just so you know, any impacts for other things or any of the underlying conferences, those materials and work papers are also all on the EDR website. It can sometimes be a little hard to navigate, and we're happy to help you track something down if you're having trouble, but there is a wealth of information available. Just so you know, the Florida Channel also records almost all of our impact conferences. Depending on how they're doing with their tagging, sometimes it's as easy as just typing in your bill number up in the search bar or the date of the conference. Sometimes you have to do a little more digging, but almost always recordings of those meetings are available if you'd like to go back and hear the discussion that the principals have. If the adopted impact is available and time for us to put it in the analysis, we do. So any bill being heard by our committee, we do our best to also include the fiscal impacts in the bill so you're aware of those when you're reviewing it. And if you're ever just stuck and aren't sure what to do, you're welcome to contact us. The committee staff is always willing to help. So that's all I have prepared for you today. I'm happy to take questions if you have any, and I'm going to go ahead and put our contact information up here for you as well.
Kimberly, thank you. Members, I know there's some questions, and so Representative Killebrew, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The revenue conference, when they're looking at the amount of money that the state will have, do they also look at trust funds?
You recognize.
Thank you, sir. They do. There are some trust funds that are wrapped into certain conferences, but there are also separate conferences that look specifically at certain trust funds. It depends on how the statute is set up.
Okay.
Follow up.
So, thank you. So, do they look at it as a whole or what they think they can sweep?
You recognize.
I'm not totally sure. From a revenue perspective, I'm not sure sweeping is always a factor for what we're looking at. We're looking at the money that is coming in, not how it's going to be used. And I think sweeping is more a factor of how it gets allocated at the end. Does that help?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Representative Caruso, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for your presentation. I would imagine from year to year, it's fairly consistent, the process. But I was wondering what unique dynamics came into play in 2021 in the revenue estimating conference that took the budget when we initially showed up for committees. We were talking a budget of $88 billion or $86 billion. I don't even know if it was fact or rumor. And then we landed on a budget that was $100 billion in what seemed to be like a three-month period of time. What dynamics changed or came in the
You're budget? Recognized, Kimberly.
Thank you. And I'm going to attempt to answer that. Vince may have to jump in a little bit as well. Some of that is just we did revise upwards significantly how much we expected to bring in a couple of big areas because our economy did really well. Unexpectedly, there were a lot of people buying a lot of things, and there was a lot of corporate income. In general, Florida was doing great. So part of that was just that the underlying economic estimates were revised upward. Some of it, I think, was also federal money coming in and trying to figure out how that factored into the picture. If you have anything else you want to add, you're welcome to.
No, I think you're hitting the nail right on the head. It's that it was a combination of positive factors that led to an increased budget opportunity for us. And a lot of it is the state being open. Projections were dismal initially and then turned into very positive outcomes. And then federal dollars helped that as well. So, another question?
Thank you, Chair. No.
Anybody else? Yes, Representative Hart.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the presentation. Sorry, I have a cold. I just noticed that on our resource demand conferences where you all actually put sexual predators, is there a reason, do they require more money to be spent on our sexual predators in our prisons as opposed to our regular prison population?
You recognize?
I honestly don't know, but I would be happy to look into that and get back to you.
Thank you. Representative Escamani, you have a question?
Thank you so much, Chair, and thanks so much, Kimberly. I just have a few quick questions. What happens when a score cannot be met? Because I know in the tax handbook, sometimes it says indeterminate, positive, or negative indeterminate. I know combined reporting in the tax handbook, that's what's outlined today. So what does that mean when a conference can't actually pick a score, can't pick a number?
You recognize.
Great question. So kind of the first answer I want to give is, at any given meeting, if they can't reach a score, typically they'll send it back. But you're right that there are situations where what they adopt is an insignificant or an indeterminate, either positive or negative. Typically what that means is we're pretty sure there's going to be an impact, and we're sure that it's either going to be above or below the insignificance threshold. But because there are so many interrelated factors that we're not always able to identify or calculate, that they're not able to come to a specific number that everyone can agree on.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for that. Is it my understanding, based on your presentation, that bills that get to the impact conference are typically bills that are already agendaed, or is it leadership saying, we want you to look at these bills, and or can it just be language that kind of floats around that doesn't even have a bill yet? Maybe it's going to be a committee bill later or amendment later. So who actually gets to choose what gets to the revenue conference, I guess, is my question.
You're recognized.
So it's not me. In general, I think it's kind of a decision. The staff director of the committee serving as the principal normally has some control over that. I know in general this year and in recent years, as much as possible, the effort has been to score filed bills rather than proposed language. I think that some proposed amendments there may be some flexibility, but I think the goal is, we have limited resources and limited time, and so the priority is for things that have been filed. I know when members ask to have things put on schedule, Vince does what he can to try to get that on the schedule. Does that kind of answer your question?
It does, and then just one quick follow-up to Kimberly. I know so all the meetings are always open to the public, and I noticed that the meeting rooms are usually pretty empty. There's those of us watching online, but there's tends to be lobbyists in the room. So I am curious if you could also outline, what relationship do lobbyists play? Are lobbyists also asking staff to score something or asking staff for, who wants this bill scored? Because I feel like they watch the process much more closely at times than some policymakers. So I'm just curious, what's the role that lobbyists play in this process as well?
Right.
Sure. Lobbyists can't put things on agenda or request for things to be put on agenda. To the extent that a lobbyist is working with a member and the member requests that staff discuss something with a lobbyist, that does sometimes happen. Certain lobbyists who are very familiar with the process, I think, are sometimes more interested in attending in person. The Florida Channel does a great job, but sometimes audio can drop in or out or something doesn't get caught. And if you're in the room, sometimes you're able to hear the discussion. And I would guess, as a lobbyist, that could be useful for trying to figure out how to fix things. But in general, they can provide input if they feel like it is relevant to a fiscal score at an open noticed meeting. That does occasionally happen, but they are not involved in putting things on the schedule or involved really in the discussions of how things should be scored.
Thank you. Any other questions, members? Yes, Representative Altman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know back around 2010, we had a lot of discussion about dynamic scoring in the Impact Conference. And actually, we passed legislation. And basically, we've all seen bills die because we use a very static scoring system. And some bills we feel like might produce economic activity, thereby produce revenue. So it allows the Speaker and the Senate President to make a request to do cost-benefit analysis, return on investment, that dynamic type of scoring when suitable. Has that been done in the last 11 years?
You recognize?
No.
Hasn't been done what?
It hasn't been requested.
Follow up.
Well, it's more of a comment, but okay. it was a very big, I mean, we spent a lot of time passing legislation. Just unfortunate that it hasn't. Do you know why it hasn't been?
Vince will chime in here, Kim, if you want to.
I'm happy to respond.
Go ahead, Kimberly. Please, go ahead.
So partly because it is a statute that is triggered by request, and to my knowledge, no one has requested it.
Yeah.
But I think some of that may reflect the fact that dynamic scoring is really, really time intensive. So for those of you who aren't aware, what we do here is, as he mentioned, kind of a static situation. We look at the direct impacts. Like I mentioned, if we suddenly exempt red widgets, how many red widgets are we currently selling? What's our current revenue from tax on red widgets? And then we assume that if they're exempt, we will lose that revenue. Dynamic scoring looks more at all of the ripple effects from that exemption. So are we going to open new factories to create red widgets that have jobs, that have people then go out and buy other things that may contribute to the economy? And there are a lot of factors at play in dynamic scoring, all of which require a lot of time-intensive work and a lot of expertise. And while there is a statute that would allow for any particular piece of legislation to have that level of review, I think to some extent it's been kind of a resource allocation decision, is at least partly my guess, and or there hasn't been an issue that they've wanted to request that for thus far.
Quick question. Good.
Are you aware, and you may not know this, but maybe follow up with us, if any other states are doing dynamic scoring?
Recognized.
I don't.
Yeah, I figured.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I feel like I've looked at a couple of states and didn't notice them doing it, but I'm not aware of any that are.
Is it possible to find out? Let us know.
We'll see about our resource management, but we'll try.
Okay.
Members of the Albany, you done? Good?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Any other members? Kimberly, thank you. That was a great answer to that question. I'm glad you were able to do that. And members, I think what we wanted to have the opportunity to do today was get some explanation on revenue estimating conferences and the impact so that you know that there are a lot of inputs going into those. You can watch them on the Florida Channel. For me, it's difficult. I have a hard time staying awake. They're speaking at a high level. But I want everyone to recognize that there's a crystal ball that's not crystal clear, but there is a process, and the process helps us understand the dynamics of where we could be in any of these solutions. Members will come with bills. I had members come and say, we want to hear this bill, and I said, well, do you know what the impact could be? And we find out it's a $50 or $60 million impact for something they think is very simple, and it just does not fit into the budgetary process for us. So the answer is not no, because it's myself or the staff saying no. There is a lot of calculations that go into understanding what's impactful and the impact that it will have from an estimating conference perspective. So certainly Kimberly and the staff are available to answer questions. Often we have presentations, and later on we look at those presentations and we see that maybe we had a question or something else we didn't get a chance to get answered. So feel free to do that. I think, Kimberly, you've implied that you'd be available for further up, follow-up if we had it. So thank you so much for the presentation. Well done, and accolades to you and the staff for getting it done. So, members, if there's nothing else for the good of the committee, we will adjourn. So that concludes our committee for today, and recognize McLean. Moves, we rise without objection, so the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.